This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msbnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Three Man Front.
And of course, today, 9/11, we'll certainly never forget all of those who lost their lives on that day. And I can certainly, I think everybody can. You can remember exactly where you were on 9/11. I was still in college and had an early class and was getting ready for class and turned on the news and everything that transpired that day. It's hard to believe. It's been what, 19 years? 18 years?
18 years. It's amazing. I remember I was here in Birmingham. I was had just moved back and was actually coaching football at Bumpus Middle School. And you obviously come downstairs and you turn the news on and you see it. And then I think you, like most people, I was locked in the rest of the day. Obviously terrified at times, uncertain of a lot of things at times, but I think that's what most of us felt, is we wanted to help, we wanted to do something, but what could we do? We had never experienced anything like that in our lifetime. So it's a day that I'll never forget, and a day that I know most of our listeners will never forget exactly what they did and where they were as well.
I mean, what I remember, obviously, beyond the tragedy, is just how good it felt to see people come together, and especially when we can be at times, as citizens of the United States, so divided over silly things sometimes. I mean, some things we're divided over serious, but a lot of times it's pretty silly stuff that we get entrenched on, and
right.
We don't want to listen to our neighbors about silly stuff. To see people instantly drop that and help, I think that shows who we are as a people, and we always do that in times of need. We've seen that in this state with the tornadoes, and we saw it that day on 9/11.
Those are certainly going to be 2 days, people in this state, you'll remember where you were.
It didn't matter that you were an Auburn fan.
No.
You were coming from Auburn to help in Tuscaloosa. I saw trucks and trucks, and just like that day on 9/11, you didn't care that you didn't get along with your neighbor on political issues or anything stupid like that. You went to help.
I actually wore a Yankees hat for, like, 3 months after that, just because of 9/11 and everything that happened. I know it happened more places than New York, but to me that was, you know, just that's how I wanted to.
Well, it was one of those times following that too that sports became maybe more important than what it really is in our country.
Right,
sports was a big part in helping people get back to normalcy, helping people come together, helping people with a small distraction of the terror that had stricken our entire country for a long time. And very rarely do we look at sports that way. And, you know, there were a couple of weeks after that, certain times, certain small pockets that we did. And there are a lot of people that needed it. And there are a lot of people that suffered serious tragedy. And it's when you can get that kind of a distraction under those circumstances, it can do magical things for you.
If you're an average Alabama fan, what do you want to see from Alabama in the first half of this game?
Take the crowd out of the game early, which they have the potential to do with their explosive offense. You get the crowd, you don't allow them to stick around in the game and become a factor in the game. That's one. I think better play along the offensive line will be something that every Alabama fan will be watching this weekend. Najee Harris will be another player that everybody's watching this weekend to see if he's to see if he can build on what we saw. He gave us a little bit last Saturday, which is seeing the hole a little better and running a little harder. And then beyond that, Landrum, it's those two inside linebackers that are freshmen that have – this is their first real road game. And they played a neutral site, but that was – 80% Alabama fans and 90% Alabama fans. This is going to be a loud environment. See how they handle the moment, because they're going to mess something up early on. How they respond to that, and Nick Saban will learn a lot about those guys this weekend.
Cole, for South Carolina, do you have the guys in the front seven that can take on that offensive line, or without having to bring an extra guy in the box, kind of having the game plan that Duke did at times there in the first game of the season?
South Carolina's got some guys who can be a problem. Javon Kinlaw is where it starts. He's an interior defensive lineman that can be a guy that can penetrate, can disrupt. He's long. He kind of reminds you a little bit of a Raekwon Davis, a guy that can get his arms up and remove passing lanes, especially when he gets a push in pass rush situations. You know, DJ Wonnum's a guy that can sort of help you off the edge. I think he can be someone. I think he's a little better in the run game than he is as a pass rusher. But this is not a bad front seven for South Carolina. It'll be the best front seven Alabama's played. Because I think that Duke defensive line and linebacking core had a couple of veterans. They were sort of crafty, maybe played out over their skis a little bit against Alabama. But just from a talent and size perspective, I think South Carolina will be the Alabama offensive line's biggest test. Now, that changes because, obviously, when you can throw the ball the way that Alabama does, you're not going to get 8-9 guys in the box a lot of the times. So I'll be interested to see how Will and T-Rob play it against this Alabama offense. I would suspect they want to try to apply some pressure and see if they can force Tua into some mistakes. They do like their corners. I know they like J.C. Horn a lot. I know they like their young corners that are coming in as well, but this is a different test. This is a different crew, and you've got to be creative. I think you have to try to mask a lot of different things if you're going to be disruptive with this Alabama offense at all.
Well, you saw a lot of yards against Charleston Southern from Rico Dowdle, also Tavian Feaster, the transfer from Clemson.
I don't know how they're going to handle running backs. I mean, they had like 11 guys carry the ball last week. Their backfield's loaded with talent. They got plenty of dudes back there. So how they distribute the carries in this particular game, it will be interesting to see, because obviously the guy you have the most confidence with is the one that needs to get the most carries against Alabama.
And their go-to receiver is Brian Edwards, who had 6 catches, 119 yards, and 2 touchdowns last week versus Charleston Southern. I'll be interested on the defensive side of the ball just to see what Pete Golden, what kind of looks he tries to give a young quarterback starting in his first SEC game.
Yeah, it's intriguing because we don't know a lot about this Alabama defense. They just haven't been tested. They haven't gone up against any competition that could really, you know, threaten them. And I told you, watching the film about Jordan Battle getting the start at safety, we didn't see Shaheem Carter much last week. And I'm hearing some rumblings that's surprising to me, and I don't know if I'll look into it a little more. It's interesting to see what practice reports come out later this week that Josh Jobe hasn't been grading out real well. And I don't know how they would do that, because he hadn't been tested all that much against those teams. But the coaches have ways of figuring out that out in terms of their grades and did he do the assignment, did he play the right level, all the stuff that you would grade a corner on. And then obviously they got him in practice every week. So I don't know if it's just the rumor mill going around about Josh Jobe, but that's something I'll be watching, how much he plays this week.
Well, it's a 2:30 game in Williams-Brice. No, it's not at night. We know of the atmosphere there at night, but it'll be a raucous crowd because Alabama's coming in.
It's a 2:30 kick. Everybody in this league knows what a 2:30 kick means. You know that it is the premier matchup of the weekend. Now, obviously, can it be a little bit louder and a little bit more exciting at night sometimes? Sure, but we know what 2:30 means. Just like the Georgia game last year when South Carolina got run, that didn't hurt that atmosphere at all, that it was hot and it was during the day. People knew what that 2:30 atmosphere meant and what that game was all about. Not to mention, it's Alabama coming to town. It's been a while since they've been there. Willie B will be rocking. I mean, it is one of the most, I think it's maybe the most underrated atmosphere in the SEC. And more people know about it now. 5 years ago, 10 years ago, you didn't hear a lot about it. Now more people understand that it can be a really cool place to watch a game. I think it's the most underrated venue in the SEC.
Well, if I'm Will Muschamp,
we know about Tennessee, yeah. We know about LSU, we know about Alabama, Auburn, we know what Georgia is, but you don't get South Carolina mentioned in those tiers very often. I think when they have a lot to play for, and I think right now they still do, it can be one of the loudest places in this league.
Well, you don't want to go in with a defeatist attitude, but you're realistic. If you're South Carolina, you got nothing to lose in this game. Everything to gain and making a statement and proving that, you know, not only can you be competitive, but maybe have a chance to win there in the fourth quarter. It'll certainly be tough, but if I'm Will Muschamp, I'm telling my guys, nobody thinks that you can do this. You're a 25.5 point dog at home. Let's go out and prove what we're made of. And guys like Tavian Feaster, who has been on Clemson teams, who has been a part of championships, some of that leadership that they have, maybe they can make it interesting for a half. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't see this game going into the fourth quarter anywhere close. There's just too much talent discrepancy. But I do think there's some truth in what you say from an aspect of they really don't have much to lose, because if you can prove yourself that you can compete with those guys. That doesn't mean that you're going to win, but you can have your guys prove to themselves, to their teammates, that we can compete with this team. And I mean, if you get that, then you start building some belief in what you're building as a team. So after Saturday's game, Nick Saban gets to ask, you know, what kind of value do you get in playing New Mexico State, and how could this game possibly help you get prepared for what's coming in the SEC? And Nick Saban went on another scheduling sort of giving his philosophy on what he wants for scheduling, and he brought up again how difficult it is to get teams to come in and play Alabama at Bryant-Denny Stadium. Well, two teams have basically accepted that challenge. One was Army. And we've seen Army go play on the road at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
We saw Army go and scare the daylights out of Michigan last week. So sign me up for that one. I would love to see that.
I think a lot of Alabama fans would love that home and home.
No, that'd be a fun trip.
Yeah.
But another team from right here in the state has accepted the challenge, and it's none other than the Troy Trojans, who tweeted out earlier today a video of Nick Saban's answer to that specific question on Saturday with the emoji of a hand raised, basically saying, we'll play you. What do you guys think of that?
I would love to see it. I would love to see all of our in-state teams play each other. I think that if it's Alabama, if it's Auburn, if it's UAB, if it's Jacksonville State, if it's Troy, if it's South Alabama, if it's Alabama A&M, Alabama State, I think if you're going to play those non-conference games, why not play a team in-state? I think it's better for travel. I think it's better for experience. I mean, do we think that most players at South Alabama and at Troy and at UAB probably during their recruitment would have liked to have had some interest from Alabama and Auburn?
Sure.
They'd love to go play in those stadiums. I mean, probably a lot of those kids grew up wanting to play in those stadiums. So I think the Super Six has done something really cool that gives a couple of teams the opportunity every year to play in one of those venues. But just to keep it in state and to provide those teams that opportunity, I'd be all for it. I'd like to see more of it.
I don't know how.
I mean, listen, I was on an Auburn team that played UAB. They scared the hell out of us.
Yes.
I mean, that was a tight game. The first game of my redshirt freshman year, and you know, UAB had Pernell Davis and those guys on that defensive line. They're actually a pretty good football team, and they were not an easy team to knock off. So I understand that you run the risk. I mean, UAB's gone to LSU and won. Troy's gone to LSU and won. So you don't want that to happen, but I think it would generate a lot more interest than if you're playing Citadel or if you're playing Chattanooga. So if you're playing Mercer, I think the interest of you, we talk about attendance. Would attendance not go up if Alabama A&M's playing in Tuscaloosa or if South Alabama's playing in Tuscaloosa?
It's you're like Alabama a lot more fans State, there. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I think it only makes sense.
You know, I don't think, and I'll have to look this up, but I did a story on this once. I don't think Alabama has played an in-state team other than Auburn since 1944.
Wow.
I mean, you're talking World War II since Alabama last played an in-state team. Now, listen, I'm just going to be – let's just deal in reality here. Alabama's not playing UAB. I mean, we can sit here and talk about it, but I just don't see that ever happening. Or at least
– you can't get Tuskegee or, like, Spelman from down the road? I mean –
there's no reason you shouldn't be able to play
Alabama,
Jacksonville State, South Alabama.
Sure.
If you're scared and you don't want to get upset, I can understand you may not – I want to play Troy because Troy has put up some pretty good football.
Well, as far as group of five teams, they're going to be in your top ten. You're going to think about Troy when you think about group of five teams, aren't you?
When's the last time did Auburn and Troy don't play that often, right?
It's been a while, right?
But at least, I can understand that. That's kind of like the Alabama Auburn thing. They're pretty close in proximity, and there's always the argument: why should you help someone else that might eventually kind of be sort of a rival and help build their? So I sort of get that. And there's that whole history with Alabama, UAB. We're not going to rehash that. I'm not defending it. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. But you can play Jacksonville State.
Yeah.
You can play South Alabama. But and keep that money in state. And as Cole said, travel would be easier. You'd have a larger contingent of visiting fans coming into your stadium.
According to Wikipedia, Auburn and Troy have not played.
I didn't think they'd ever played.
So.
But there have been a lot of players that have –
Well, Auburn acted as a bit of a feeder system for Troy for some time. With the Larry Blatney connection, I think helped a little bit.
DeMontre Carter, I believe he went there. Orlando Parker, believe he was one of those guys.
There were some dudes that
got out of Auburn.
Well, there's some Auburn high school kids. Gerald Jernigan was a stud receiver. He's from the Auburn area. DeMarcus Ware is from the Auburn area. So, yeah, there were a couple whiffs by Auburn that not getting them to campus, and they ended up playing at Troy and having great careers.
So Auburn has played. They played Samford. They played Jacksonville State. They played A&M. They played Alabama State. And I believe those are the teams that they played from the state. I don't see how it's a lose for Alabama to play in Alabama State.
But I'm going to bring up an alternate kind of out-of-the-box idea that Alabama could do that would get interest for a non-conference opponent to bring in. Play a conference opponent not on your schedule as a non-conference game. That way you could get around the SEC more quickly. You're probably going to have better attendance. I mean, even if it's Vanderbilt, you're going to get better attendance than you are for New Mexico State. And they've done it before. They did it in the 60s and the 70s. You could play out of teams in conference. We see it in baseball every year.
I think there's an ACC team that's doing that this year. So maybe like a Wake Forest or somebody's playing somebody that doesn't count as a conference game. I can't remember exactly who it is.
So if say, for instance, Alabama didn't have Missouri on its schedule for the next 8 years, bring Missouri in. Go to Missouri. I mean, do a home-and-home with Missouri that's not a conference game.
And it solves one of those deals where, you know, Nick Saban, he's been a proponent of nine conference games and playing 12 Power 5 teams.
It'd be better for the fans.
Yeah, bring in a Missouri or heck.
And it wouldn't, if you did a home and home, it wouldn't cost you an arm and a leg. What did Auburn just, there was details on that Auburn bringing in New Mexico State. New Mexico State's going to get nearly $2 million to play Auburn in the future. If you do a home and home Missouri out of conference, you can get that game much cheaper. And then you're allowing your fans an extra road game they can go to 1 year, and you get a good quality home game for your fans.
Go back to UAB's opener that they had on the Thursday night, Legion Field, almost 40,000 fans. Alabama State brought a bunch of folks, being just 90 miles down the road.
Yeah,
had a great band, had a great atmosphere. I'm all for it. But I can see where the UAB, the Alabama, that's just not going to
work. Not going to happen.
No, it's not. Saturday, number 9, Florida is at Kroger Field. They're in Lexington, Kentucky. It's 6 o'clock kick there on ESPN. We used to talk about this game, and what will we always mention, Aaron, when we talked about Kentucky-Florida?
That losing streak, baby.
That streak. When would it ever be broken? Well, we saw it broken last year in what turned out to be really the sign that Mark Stoops and Kentucky had kind of turned that corner.
Yeah, absolutely.
Surprising everybody.
Remember how that game ended?
I was on the sideline for it.
There was a strip sack by Josh Allen, right?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
So Florida's going to head up there this week, the number 9 team in the country. Last week didn't tell us anything, playing UT Martin in the shutout win. Going back to the Miami win, now it looks even less impressive. I'll give UNC credit, but they were able to knock off the Canes there in Chapel Hill last weekend. Florida. How much are we going to learn about Florida, Cole?
A lot.
In this game?
A lot, I think, because Kentucky's a physical football team. And when you watch Drake Jackson and you watch Logan Stenberg and you watch this Kentucky offensive line, they get after you. And with Kavassier Smoke and A.J. Rose, they have enough weapons now with Ahmad Wagner out on the outside and what they're able to do with Lynn Bowden and in the backfield and down the field. They force you to defend different things. And this is going to be an intriguing matchup. I think when Kentucky wants – I think when both teams run the ball, Kentucky has the advantage up front. And I think when both teams are passing the ball, Florida has the advantage up front. I think the scheme helps Florida's offensive line a little bit more when they're throwing the ball. And then obviously those Florida pass rush that have, 15 sacks in 2 games, they're going to be very difficult for this offensive line to deal with, mainly Darian Kennard at right tackle. Watch number 70 for Kentucky in obvious pass downs. That's going to be a mismatch. He's a big, huge, massive kid, but he struggles in pass pro. He's the only one that struggles in pass pro, but if Eddie Grant doesn't get him help in this game and they're stuck in a lot of 3rd-and-8s, 3rd-and-10s, Florida will be able to take advantage of that. Watch for Jabari Zuniga and Grenard to be able to find ways to pressure Sawyer Smith and make his life uncomfortable. That, to me, is the matchup that will go a long way in deciding who wins this football game.
How much differently do we feel about this game, or does Las Vegas feel about this game, if Terry Wilson were playing?
I think a little bit. And then, you know, it'd be an interesting question for Vegas runner tomorrow, because he will always tell you that
one player,
one guy's never moving a line 2, 3, 4 points. It's just not going to happen. So Vegas obviously feels pretty confident that Florida wins this football game, but man, that place is going to be loud. That place is going to be rocking, and I don't really know what we know about this Florida team yet.
Well,
I watched the Tennessee Martin film this morning, and they're not a very good football team. Like, whoa, they don't belong on the same field as Florida. But Felipe Franks look better, but he's got some guys banged up. C.J. Henderson's probably not going to go. Now Kadarius Toney is banged up. So
the biggest disappointment for me, guys, has been the rushing attack for Florida. You've got LaMichael Perine. You don't have Jordan Scarlett, who you had last year. He moves on to the NFL. Right now, you look down their schedule at some of the teams that they're going to play. They got to get that.
Malik Davis is just as explosive as LaMichael Perine. The offensive line's not good enough.
And they're averaging 140 yards rushing per game,
and most of that came last week against UT Martin.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't anticipate the run game is going to get going at a comfortable clip against Kentucky. The defensive line's pretty good. I mean, Calvin Taylor inside is like 6'9", 320 pounds, and he can actually move a little bit. Quentin Bohanna will be in the middle of that defense. They're not just going to go out and run for 200 yards. Now, what Dan will do, you saw him, he did it against Miami, he did it against UT Martin. He'll continue to just spit that ball out quick to the outside. A lot of perimeter throws, a lot of quick throws, try to loosen up the defense, and then he'll try to run the ball a little bit when he gets those outside linebackers removed from the tackle box, and then he'll start trying to run it, and then they'll take their shots off play action down the field. I mean, that's kind of his formula. That's kind of his plan. But keep in mind, Mark Stoops is a defensive-minded coach. He's played this team before. He knows what he's going to get. So I think this is going to be really a sneaky good game. I mean, I don't think that by any stretch of the imagination that Florida's going to walk in there and blow Kentucky out. I just don't see that happening.
I mean, that's a testament to what Stoops has built there. The fact that we're talking about Kentucky in these terms now, that even after having losing their starting quarterback, that we just feel good enough about them, the way they're built, which is always, if you're talking about how a football team's built, starts inside out, right? It's all about the lines of scrimmage. And the fact that Kentucky has built itself in that way allows you to feel pretty good that they're not going to get blown out.
And Kentucky is, they're really good at home. We go back to last year. Remember Joe Moorhead taking that Mississippi State team in there and what Kentucky was able
to
do?
That might have actually been the game. I mean, the Florida game mentally and emotionally put them over a giant hurdle. But that was the game when, at least for me personally, when I was, because I didn't really know what Florida was going to be last year. But that was the game, because we thought Mississippi State was going to be really good last year. A lot of people did. And that was kind of the game where you said, whoa, this Kentucky team might be for real. Like, they might be able to challenge every opponent on their schedule. Didn't play out that way, but that was the one last year that really opened up my eyes. And I saw them. We had South Carolina there last year. We had Tennessee there, I think, 2 years ago. And we had Vanderbilt there last year. So, I've been there a couple times and seen how that place gets. It can be an intimidating place for visiting teams.
It'll be interesting to see, also, guys, Kentucky and how they use Sawyer Smith, the transfer from Troy. He's a different dynamic. Terry Wilson, he can beat you with the legs. I don't know if that's a Sawyer Smith. What that offense looks like,
but
what Eddie
remember,
Grant's dialing up.
We had Neil Brown on the show in the offseason, and he was really confident in what Sawyer Smith was going to be able to add. Said he did some really nice things for him in that system. This may help them balance things out a little bit more. Maybe he helps him down the field some. Now, he's obviously not going to give you the run threat that Terry Wilson is, and Terry Wilson's run dynamic is one that forces defenses to defend it, and he's been fairly durable up until that horse collar tackle last week against Eastern Michigan. But maybe with some of the weapons that he's got, like an Ahmad Wagner on the outside and Lynn Bowden and some of those backs out of the backfield, he'll be able to even things out some. But this will come down to Kentucky getting the run game going. They run the ball in a comfortable way, then they'll be in that game in the fourth quarter.
We were talking about Auburn and Kent State, what we expected to see, and would we see Gus Malzahn really forcing the issue when it came to the running game, and Auburn has had trouble in the first two games, especially in the first half of moving guys around. You would expect that maybe against an Oregon team. Not so much against Tulane. You could talk about the big guy they had in the middle, 6'9", 350 pounds. Hey, he's tough to move, but you're Auburn. You still
that guy wasn't really that big of a problem, though.
Well, just stood there.
But I'm just saying, when you go back and you study it, and you see the negative run plays, he wasn't responsible for the majority of the negative run plays. He wasn't. I mean, it's not being able to climb to the second level. I think he impacted that a few times.
Some misreads by Bo Nix.
There were a few of those, which I'm wondering how many of them they're just calling and how many of them they're letting him read, because him being able to run the perimeter has been there a lot, and he hadn't taken it. But, I mean, I didn't watch that game and say, ooh, man, if it wasn't for that nose guard, Auburn would have run for 300 yards.
Right.
That wasn't the case at all. It's about being outnumbered in the box. It's about guys missing one-on-one blocks. If Dak Driscoll missed a couple blocks, Prince Tega played one of the worst games I've ever seen him play. He didn't even play well. He got beaten pass pro multiple times and wasn't great in the run game. Everybody wanted to beat me up in the offseason for not just anointing him the best tackle in college football and saying that he was a lock as a top 10 NFL draft pick, and he's not. He hadn't played that way, especially this year. Now, the good news is, on the flip side, number five has played like every bit of a top 10 pick this year. Every single bit of a top 10 NFL draft pick. Derrick Brown has been dominant inside for that Auburn defense. The right guard for Tulane, I would suspect, is reconsidering his future after that game last week. Because he got embarrassed a couple times by Derrick Brown. Now, it's going to happen to a lot of guys he plays against. But the thing that I have seen Derrick Brown improve upon the most is his body control this season. There was one play, it was kind of an inside zone. He was lined up at left defensive tackle, and it was an inside zone to the right, so coming right at him. And his responsibility was the B-gap. He's got the B-gap filled. And he's leaning way to his left, and he's got the right guard for Tulane draped all over him, leaning on him, like all 300 pounds leaning on him, and he's able to like reposition himself across the offensive lineman's face, totally off balance, and lean over and help make the tackle. Like that kind of body control at 315, 320 pounds is just uncanny. He's very loose for how big he is, and he's still got a ton of power. He still pushes people around, so they're living up to their billing on the other side. I'm still a little bit concerned with how twitchy they are off the edge. I think they really lack speed and twitch and quickness off the edge. But if you got other guys that are winning their one-on-ones and breaking down the pocket, I don't know if that's something that you're going to have to consistently impact the pocket.
Aaron, you got to find that balance if you're Gus Malzahn calling plays. And while you're going to want to go out there and push Kent State around, which you can, and get Booby Whitlow some big runs and maybe work some of those other guys in. I don't know if we're going to see DJ Williams. Gus said that the young running back, he's been dinged up a little bit. Does he make his debut? But if you know what you have personnel-wise, and you don't believe that that's necessarily your strength, just getting up there and pushing guys around, do you foresee an issue against Kent State, or do you start running more of what you're probably going to be faced with running against a Texas A&M, or against a Mississippi State, LSU, Alabama, and so on?
I think there's things that you can gain even if an opponent is overmatched. You can, especially if you're coming off a performance in which you didn't perform particularly well in that area. And some of that's just confidence.
Right.
So that's worth it alone to do. Now, do you want to just go out there and run exclusively that? No, but giving those guys a little bit of confidence before they head into A&M's, not a bad move.
But you can't ignore, if you're Gus, Bo Nix in the passing game, because Bo Nix has missed some throws. Now, he's had wide receivers that at times have not helped him out, but he's missed some throws that he's going to have to make. He's been pretty good on the right side of the field as far as completions, but when he's thrown to the center of the field or the left-hand portion of the field, he's been below 50%.
I feel like he's aiming the ball. When I watch him, when I study him, I feel like he's aiming the football, and he's not just comfortable throwing the football. Some of this is understandable. He's never done this on this stage with this team, with these players in that uniform. So some of those things are just going to continue to work themselves out. There's no part of me that says hit the panic button on Bo Nix or,
no.
Oh, I don't see the light at the end of the tunnel for Bo Nix. He's making some young player mistakes. But that offense, what you said earlier, I think, is accurate. That offense has to continue to evolve to help him be successful, take advantage of some of the strengths that he can give to that offense and some of the things that are there that defenses are giving you. And that's one thing that you see a little bit of it, and then you see them get away from it. You see a little bit of it, and then they get away from it. So I think consistently finding what the defense is giving you, taking it, and then being able to exploit that a step further and find some explosive plays.
Yeah, and giving him that confidence, because he's going to need it when they go on the road, his first road start in his college football career at Kyle Field, because that's going to be a whole different animal. That environment, what he's going to be faced with.
We're going to talk about it a lot next week, Landry, but Bo Nix has got to win that game. Auburn's not running the ball.
That's a lot.
Clemson couldn't run the ball on A&M. Clemson had three big runs. Three in the game. In the game. A&M shut them down on the ground.
That's a bad time to lose Seth
A&M's
Williams.
A&M's D-line was, if it's a win or a lose against the run, they were successful. They won against Clemson.
Can you manufacture, though, non-traditional runs with
Bo?
You
have to.
Bo's going to have to hurt him with
his legs. It's going to have to be quarterback runs. It's going to have to be little quick throws, little dump-offs that we're now seeing essentially be toss sweeps. Those are the things that they're going to have. And again, Aaron, it goes back to formations like I've talked about. You got to run the ball out of 3, 4, and 5 wide more often. You have to. You can't keep adding people to the box and trying to run with them, especially when you're adding receivers to the box and then trying to run.
Guys can't block, yeah.
Bunch of guys
bring
in.
A receiver to the box and then trying to run. All right. Here, 180-pound kid, go block a defensive end. What good does that do?
Three-man front. Weekdays 10 till 2 on Jocks 94.5, JocksFM.com, and the Jocks mobile app.